A decade ago, Dr. Alan Townsend's family received two unthinkable catastrophic diagnoses. His four-year-old daughter and his wife developed unrelated, life-threatening forms of brain cancer. As he witnessed his young daughter fight during the courageous final months of her mother's life, Townsend, a lifelong scientist, was indelibly altered. He began to see scientific inquiry as more than a source of answers to a given problem, but also as a lifeboat, a lens on the world that could help him find peace with the painful realities he could not change. Though throughout his scientific wonder, he found ways to bring meaning to his darkest period. He writes of his experiences in the new book, This Ordinary Stardust, A Scientist's Path from Grief to Wonder. And it's a pleasure to welcome Dr. Alan Townsend to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A pleasure.
Thanks, Joe. It's great to be here.
At what point do you decide that you want to write this, and I assume write it for an audience as opposed to just writing it for yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the backstory on that is kind of twofold. When, you know, as you mentioned, our daughter was diagnosed first, and I've always loved to write, but I did most of that writing within my field, within science, including some popular audience stuff. And I'd started a blog that was just some science stuff like that. And then when that one hit our family, obviously it just changes everything overnight. The day she was diagnosed, I went home that night and I just wrote a short piece that really was, almost as you say, kind of for me as a way to process it. But I don't even know why. I just threw it up on the blog and it gained some resonance with people that they felt like it helped them think about hard things they were going through. So I started writing shorter pieces throughout our family's journey. And then the book was born from my late wife, from Diana, just a couple of months before she passed away, asking me to write it. And so, you know, no pressure, right? But that's where it started, was her asking me.
Do you know why she asked you to write it and what she wanted you to accomplish?
Yeah, I mean, I know what she said, right? Which is, and this was just, she was extraordinary in a lot of ways, but that included that she was just a very, very generous person, including through her illness and how she was in the world. And when she asked me to write it, she said, you know, please make our story help other people. And it came from having seen the blog pieces and the rest and just recognizing that a lot of people go through hard things and that maybe putting something out there could bring a little ease to some. And that's what she wanted. In hindsight, I have little doubt she also did it for me, knowing that the writing was something that helped me work through things, and she knew that it was going to be tough, and so I think she probably thought it would help me too, and it did.
When you start this, and even with that first piece that you put on the blog, how personal is it to what was going on in your life at that moment?
Very personal, right? I mean, and one of the hard things in writing something like this, especially the book, is putting yourself out there in that way. And you know, fast forwarding a bit, when I got to the point of really working with an agent on this and trying to get to a true final version of the book, and she's incredible. I mean, the agent I worked with is just this remarkably brilliant person, but who also, you know, she just said, like, look, if you're going to do this, you have to be willing to do that. You have to be willing to just kind of put it all out there for the reader. That's what you need to do. And that, you know, that's hard at times. It feels a little vulnerable, but ultimately that's kind of what I did.
Again, the name of the book is This Ordinary Stardust, A Scientist's Path from Grief to Wonder. The idea of being a scientist through this allows you what avenues, do you think, of how you look at a situation in these two particular situations that other people perhaps would not?
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, I'm not going to pretend that I had the magic formula in the middle of it and great enlightenment or the rest, but I do think it helped me and Diana, who was also a scientist, and a lot of that for me is kind of post hoc reflection and recognizing what I learned and went through. And, you know, science is a lot of things and incredible in so many ways. Our entire world, as we all know, is very shaped by it and possible because of it. But I think for me, in many ways prior to this, it was something I loved because it's what I did, but I really viewed it as You know, I think a lot of people think it's, all right, it's a source of a cure, a technical solution. How do you build a bridge? How do you make an iPhone? Whatever, right? Like, that's what it's about. And what I came to realize going through it and after is that, you know, at the core, thinking like a scientist or kind of being having that lens on the world can also show you some pretty helpful just life skills. You know, to do science well, you have to be willing to see things as they are, not as you might want them to be. You have to find acceptance. You have to find acceptance of the fact that things don't go the way that you want them to or expect them to all the time. Failure is very common. So all these things that are real in our lives as well, but science kind of teaches you and you get used to a practice of just evaluating the world as it is and being ready to, you know, question a conclusion and look back again and kind of find another lens on it just to be able to move forward in science. And so when I faced really hard things in my life, I found that practice helpful in a broader and kind of deeper way.
Alan Townsend is the author of This Ordinary Stardust, A Scientist's Path from Grief to Wonder. You write in the prologue, because in time I came to see that far from antithetical to faith or spirituality, science offers hope that life on Earth can make its way through the eye of any needle, that our individual choices matter, and that love can bring us back from the brink of annihilation. A scientist's mindset doesn't just involve finding cures and creating new technologies. It can be, if we let it, a practice of spiritual self-salvation, an act of love. And I just found that fascinating because you are not a Christian, you do not go to church, and yet you're going on this fine line between religion and science.
Yeah, thanks for that. I learned a lot going through this, right? And so one of the things that for me, and is true for I know some people I know in science, and many it's true, not true for many others, but I didn't, as you say, I didn't grow up with a faith tradition. I didn't grow up going to church. And so the younger me was often kind of framed by what I would say was a bit of arrogance or absolutism around science as kind of the source of answers to people's problems in the world. Given enough time, enough energy, enough rest, it could kind of answer anything for us, which is, you know, and I'm being a little black and white about that. But and in truth, it's not that I demeaned religion, but I just saw it as like, well, you know, okay, that's kind of not on the same plane. It's a way for people to feel better. And I didn't recognize it in some ways for what it fully can be. And you know, obviously religion, just like science, can have plenty of downsides and do plenty of harm and all the things we know, but so can science. And so, you know, going through where I think there are lots of parallels is that they're all human constructs and traditions. They're all imperfect because of that. And they're all ultimately, in some ways, I mean, both religion and science are a source of desired answers for us as human beings and ways to try to make our lives more comfortable and feel better. And they both can be, I believe, sources of spirituality and comfort in their own way. And for me, in the end, science kind of became that. But I think there's a lot of overlap with what faith traditions provide for many others in the same way. And I just kind of was able to see that in new light and see a lot more commonality there than I once thought.
You write later in the book, brain tumors are a particularly cruel form of cancer because they can rob a person of their humanity. Talk about that in the case of your wife and of your daughter and having these life-threatening forms of brain cancer and just realizing that you have not one but two of these diagnoses that you're dealing with, and they're both very different.
Yeah, they were. And I mean, maybe I'll answer that one kind of talking about what my wife faced. And so she had a pair of glioblastomas, which are, that's not one you want to get. And, you know, that's what John McCain passed from. That's what Joe Biden's son, Beau, passed from. And they're just a very aggressive brain cancer that very few people survive very long. And what's that passage is getting at is that because it's the brain, it can just start wrecking the essence of who someone is, depending on where the tumor is in different ways. And Diana was astonishing in her ability to kind of overcome that. But in the later stages of the cancer, you know, she in particular lost a lot of her ability to communicate. She couldn't speak very well anymore. She couldn't even really write or communicate either, because it took some of that physical capacity from her away as well. And so, you know, what I came to learn in time, like, it, the words were all still there in her brain. That was still all intact, but that communication link was gone. And that, you know, that's a hell of a thing to hit someone with. And these tumors can just do all kinds of unexpected things like that as they progress. It's a little heartbreaking to watch.
Heartbreaking to watch. As a physician, what is it like to see this and to go through the healthcare system, knowing what you know as a physician, but also knowing what you know as the husband and father of two of the patients?
Well, I mean, I'm not a physician, right? I mean, I'm an environmental scientist, but I mean, it's an interesting question, right, that you ask, because I think we definitely both brought science to the table and kind of knew that in one sense, which was both a help and a hurt, right? You have an understanding of what you're facing in ways there. You know, for those, I really wondered, I mean, we were lucky to have some just truly extraordinary doctors and nurses work with us in that. And I just marvel to this day how they were able and are able to show up for pretty devastating family situations like this with as much humanity as they did, knowing what was coming. I have a couple of good friends who are physicians, and in some ways, Diana's diagnosis was more destabilizing for them than any of the rest of our friends. And I think it's because they knew. Like, they knew what was coming. They knew what she faced. And so it was very, very difficult for them to deal with that. And I get it, because when you watch it play out, it's no joke. How doctors and nurses are able to do that and not dehumanize, at least the ones that we worked with did, I have enormous respect for that. It's pretty remarkable.
Talk about that knowing of what they knew versus what you know and what you wanted to know, and I guess, quite frankly, probably what you didn't want to know.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in some ways that's kind of what I was saying about science, hoping to teach you some skills of acceptance and seeing the world as it is, but being imperfect. I mean, of course, like, if you, the person you love most in the world, the people you love most in the world are facing something like this, you're going to be both desperate for a cure and engaging in a whole bunch of denial for quite a while. And I certainly did. I mean, you're just hoping against hope. And in Diana's case, like, we just knew that her odds were virtually zero, but yet, you know, we were kind of desperate to beat those odds. And in some of that, I think that's just kind of how you have to live with it, is because it's pretty devastating. One of the things that was amazing to me about her, and part of what I tried to write out in the book and learn, is that her personality is so embedded in science and so driven by curiosity and that acceptance. I think it really let her accept her fate with a calm and peace that was very palpable and without being overcome by it. And I don't know, have all the answers for how you do that, because it's really tough. Mm. It really is. And you know, she did that, I think, knowing full well, not all of it. I mean, she hadn't lived through it, but knowing what was coming. And yet she was pretty good about just kind of saying, okay, right, like, I'm still just going to live my life. And the hard thing to do when, you know, someone is basically facing a death sentence.
For you, is there an osmosis of the calmness?
Yeah, there really was. It's a great way to phrase it. I mean, the way she showed up for herself and us in that allowed me and our daughter Neva and many others around us to have greater calm in it. I mean, it was I'm just kind of in awe. It was a gift. And I think she knew it to some degree too, and felt it and saw it, but she did. And so that, you know, that being kind of osmosis into us was a real thing that happened. Mm.
The name of the new book is This Ordinary Stardust, A Scientist's Path from Grief to Wonder. And the book is published by Grand Central. Alan Townsend, thank you very much for sharing with us. A great pleasure.
I might as well. Thanks for having me on, Joe.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is This Ordinary Stardust. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.